Hello and welcome to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the need of a car. I am Domenico.
And I'm Sumitra.
And today we have Michael Houston with us, and we're going to talk about some planning things. But before we do that, we're going to have a little bit of fun and we're going to play a game called Would You Rather, where we're going to throw a bunch of, I want to say random questions at him, but they're kind of the theme, you'll see.
Hopefully they'll be somewhat related to
they are.
Planning.
And your job, Michael, is to just choose one of the two options that we throw at you.
Okay.
All right.
Let's do it.
Who wants to start? You want to start, Sumitra, or should I?
I can start. First one, Michael. Weekend activity. Spend the day at the beach using the Sunrunner or in downtown Tampa using the Cross Bay Ferry.
Wow. Well, I'll have to say using the Sunrunner to get to the beach because, believe it or not, I have not even taken the ferry yet over to downtown Tampa. Okay. So it was on my list and maybe I'll get to do it before I move up north. But I've used the Sunrunner several times to get to the beach and it works great. So I'll choose that one.
It is great. Yeah. I love this one. Yeah. All right. Second question. E-scooters. Would you use the stand-up or the sit down?
Definitely the stand up. I've used the stand up several times, but I don't know. I don't go for the sit down. It just looks, it's not right for me.
I feel like this question really tells you what kind of person you are. I also I want to be somebody that likes the sit down ones, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I just haven't also tried them yet because I was just like, this looks uncomfortable, like just the whole, all of it. So yeah, even I have only used the stand-up ones.
Yeah.
Bikes, e-bike or regular bike?
All right, so I have both. I obviously have had a regular bike for a long time. And I don't know if you can see my e-bike actually lives in my house with me. And I would like to say that I use them both equally, but I think once you have an e-bike and you're used to getting around, especially in the summer when it's hot, it's just too easy to jump on the e-bike and get to downtown or get to the tennis courts or wherever I'm heading. So I guess I've gotten a little lazy, but I really love my e-bike. In fact, I was gone for the summer in Kentucky for 3 months, and the thing I missed most was my e-bike because I didn't have it with me.
So e-bike it is.
Yes, but I will add that I've talked to friends in New York that are really do not like the e-bikes because they tend to run over sometimes pedestrians or other bikers. So I do think we have to kind of figure out their place in the whole mobility segment. Like they're a little bit too fast for pedestrians and they're, you know, too slow sometimes to mix with cars. So there might be this kind of middle lane.
I was also just having this conversation with a bunch of artists here in Chicago as well, who are kind of debating about the e-bikes, scooters, pedestrians, and regular bikes. So there's definitely like a consensus building among bigger cities about e-bikes.
We're still learning how they fit into the urban scene.
I even had a friend who here in St. Pete who was complaining that when there are e-bikes on the Pinellas Trail, which I thought was the most appropriate place for an e-bike. But she was complaining that, you know, she's riding her bicycle, her regular bicycle, and then an e-bike just zooms past her.
Right.
And she feels like she doesn't feel as safe, I guess, riding her bicycle. And I thought that was interesting. Because I thought that of all places, that would be the most appropriate place, but apparently not everybody feels that way.
I found the same on North Shore Park where I sometimes go with my e-bike. I usually put it on the low setting or even just turn it off and pedal because you've just got this disconnect between some people walking and some people flying by on e-bikes and some people jogging. And yeah, it's a little bit chaotic.
All right, Rays games. Do you go to the Rays game taking the Sunrunner or the free downtown Looper Rays trolley?
If I went to a Rays game, and I've only been to a couple, not a huge baseball fan, I would probably go on the e-bike to get there, since I'm not that far away from it. I could actually walk there from where I am. I'm in Kenwood, so I'm not far away. So I would probably opt to walk or bike there, and yeah, park my bike right next to the door and enjoy the convenience of that.
That's cool. For exercise, do you ride your bike or walk?
I would say for exercise, again, I would like to say I ride my bike more, but now that I have the e-bike, although I do use the pedal assist when I'm on an e-bike, so I'm not that lazy. But I also try to walk a lot, so I guess I would go both there.
When you go to the Saturday morning market, bike or downtown Looper? I'm curious because you said you live close to the stadium, living in Kenwood, so that's kind of a little bit of a distance.
Yeah. No, I definitely go on my bike. On the e-bike, it has a basket on the back, so I put my little bag there, and yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do. And I love to get on the protected bike lanes on First Ave South, and on those days, there's always lots of bike traffic going up and down, which I think is really cool.
If you go exploding murals around St. Pete, and if you didn't have an e-bike, would you use a Lime e-bike or would you use a Vario scooter?
I think for something different, I'd probably use the scooter since I
Yeah.
have the bike. I do like to ride the scooters. In fact, I thought about buying a scooter instead of the e-bike. I ended up with the bike, but I enjoy the scooters too.
Yeah.
Friends visiting, take them on the downtown Looper or the Cross Bay Ferry, which you said you haven't ridden.
Well, I would use that as an opportunity to go on the ferry, I think. If I had friends visiting and we needed an activity, I would definitely go
It
on the ferry and try that.
does make for a fun day trip, and we're
Yeah.
actually Carfree St. Pete is actually working on a vacation where we take a group of like a tour of people on one side and take the Cross Bay Ferry and do like a little tour of downtown Tampa, and then we're doing the reverse for from Tampa to St. Pete. But
Great.
our listeners will hear more about that next episode.
Art walk. Would you do it with Vario scooters or walk?
Typically, again, I will defer to the e-bike. I usually like ride it somewhere and then I'll walk around, for a few blocks and then get back on it and go over to the warehouse district or someplace like that. So it's kind of a combination of mobility.
Yeah, it's and especially for the art walk, if you're in the warehouse district, the trail goes right through it, so it's just such a great way to get around the art walk too. So I do like when people ride their bikes to come see the studio.
All right, now this question I feel like could potentially be controversial.
Yes.
Bicycle load on the bus. Yes, Dimitri came up with this one. Bicycle loading on the bus. The traditional bus where you load the bike on the front, or the Sunrunner method, which apparently was invented here in St. Pete, where you load inside the
All right.
bus.
That was the last method I used, and it was very easy to use when you take it on the bus and you put it in the rack. I will say that it did. We had like at least five bikes on there that day that I took it to the beach the last
Oh,
time. So it did
wow.
take up a lot of space. In fact, some people were standing with their bikes because there, weren't enough racks. So if space gets to be a concern, I could see where, putting it outside. But I don't know how many you could put outside either. Like you can't put like five bikes on the front, right?
No, I think it's only a couple, right? I think it's only two or
Yeah.
three at max.
Yeah. So, but I like bikes. You see them on trains sometimes and in Europe and New York and places like that. So, makes a lot of sense if you got the space.
Well, that concludes our Would You Rather. You won, if
Did I
this
win
was
anything?
You don't win anything. Just win the satisfaction of knowing that you had great answers.
Thank you.
But I think now we'd like to talk more about your expertise. But before we do that, you have been on the Car Free St. Pete committee with us. You've been on Car Free St. Pete committee for a while, and we were curious what made you want to join that effort.
Yeah, I think I've been on the committee since the committee started, actually. I've been a advocate for mobility choices for, I guess, a long time. Not just because it's the lifestyle that I prefer. I like getting around, not using a car, even though I do have a car right now. But I just think it's a more sustainable pattern for cities to be able to walk, to be able to bike. And obviously it's related to my work. You know, I work in designing walkable, bikeable communities, whether they're new communities or we're doing a downtown revitalization. So it's just kind of part of my whole philosophy, I guess. So when I found the organization, I kind of jumped on board right away, no pun intended.
And, you know, you spoke about kind of being an urban planner and having an interest in joining Car Free St. Pete Committee because of that. How did you get into urban planning?
So I think the seeds were planted when I was pretty young. So when I was 8 years old, we moved from Kentucky, where I'm originally from, to Colorado. And my dad immediately took up skiing. This is related to the question. It doesn't sound like it. But he used to take us to these ski resorts in the mountains of Colorado. And they were all built around these very walkable places like Vail, Colorado, and Aspen. And what I loved about it was, even though I was a kid, I was only like 9 or 10 years old, my parents would let me go walk around these places on my own. And I loved that sense of freedom and independence that I didn't have, you know, in our suburban home, where the only thing I could walk to there was school. Thankfully, the school was close. But anywhere else, you know, you kind of had to be driven around by your mom or dad. So I think that appeal of living in a place where you can get around and by walking. And I saw people in the middle of the street for kind of the first time. Like, it's not like the streets were being, you know, you were going to be run over by a car. You actually had people interacting and in the streets. And that really appealed to me. And so that kind of stuck in my mind. And I think when I got to college, I was actually studying architecture. We had several lecturers, and one was Andres Duany, you know, well-known planner and architect. And he came and did a presentation, and he started to put into words what I had experienced as a kid, and started talking about Seaside, which was at the early phases of design. And little did I know, I, you know, 25, 30 years later, I would actually be working for him in Miami for 6 years. But I think it was that combination of experience and then starting to get exposed to planners and architects that kind of believed in that philosophy. And then later I experienced car free living, and I did my last semester of school in Venice, Italy. And I saw that cities come in very many different forms. It's not just one way of doing things. So all those things combined, I think, got me into planning eventually.
So for our listeners, can you talk about, in your words, what is urban planning? And maybe touch on Sunrise a little bit, because that's a really interesting place.
Seaside, you mean?
Seaside. Did I say Sunrise? I meant Seaside.
I've worked in the city of Sunrise, actually. It threw me off, and I was like, how did you know I'd worked in Sunrise, Florida? So I was thinking about planning, and it's funny, I looked up the definition to plan in the dictionary, I didn't like the definition at all. So I came up with my own, because I wanted to start with plan and then go to the urban direction. So I thought it was to chart out a course in advance to achieve a desirable result. And I think planning is all about that. It's about kind of projecting into the future and trying to make sure that you're on the path to achieve the right result. So if you start thinking about the urban environment and apply that to planning, then it's all about, you know, how do we get the result that we want? How do we design cities that have high quality of life, that have open space, that are equitable, that have mobility choice? You really can't do it without planning ahead of time, because that really doesn't happen just organically. It maybe used to happen organically 500 years ago when we didn't have cars and trucks and all that, but today you really have to plan for it. So I think it's super important.
Yeah, otherwise it's the developers that get to decide what happens where, and they don't really care about things like infrastructure and how the city's going to solve the problems that they might.
Right.
I shouldn't say create. They, you know, kind of.
And at the same time, obviously we do need developers because they're really the implementers, right? But if you don't kind of set the vision and some sort of guardrails on the side, you know, it kind of takes its own course. But when you do combine the two things, I mean, you think of Central Park, you know, that was a planned park, this huge park in the middle of Manhattan. They did it very early before, you know, land prices were too high. But now it benefits not only the residents and the citizens of the city, but all of the developers that developed around the edges of that made lots of money too. So it can be kind of a win-win thing, but you definitely don't want just development and developers to just lead and not, you know, plan for the whole community, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, like it's the kind of transportation also comes in the planning as well, and how you're navigating people around like different spaces in the city. So can you explain how planning plays a part in transportation infrastructure and like vice versa?
Sure. So I would say it's definitely one of the key components, you know, just getting from A to B, we've all need to do it. it's also related heavily to land use. So in the at the onset of what we call Euclidean zoning, we started separating uses, right? And putting the residential over here and single family over here and apartments over there and commercial, you know, 2 miles away. And really the only way you can get from one place to another is by automobile. So it's really critical. And I think there's a new awareness now that we need to mix up land use a little bit more. We need to integrate small apartment buildings with single family houses, and as well as like corner stores inside the neighborhoods and commercial areas that are not too far away, so that we can access those either walking or biking or transit. So I would say land use and transportation, both are kind of equal partners in the equation.
And you know, like a lot of the times, especially in the US, when we talk about transportation, we only talk about roads. And, you know, like there is so much other transportation infrastructure that cities need, like good sidewalks, like, you know, just like really basic things where like movement of people can happen more organically. How do we kind of fall a little bit short in terms of that compared to like other global places?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you go, you know, visit Europe and you see someplace like the Netherlands and you see the amount of investment they're putting into bike infrastructure and pedestrian infrastructure. And meanwhile, we're building these huge interchanges. And, you know, you look at I was just driving up north through Pasco County and they have this new interchange on I-75. And I started to wonder, like, how many miles of sidewalks could that interchange have built, you know, inside a city? Probably miles and miles, because I'm sure it cost $1 billion or literally probably $1 billion. So I really think in this country, you know, it's the tide is starting to turn a little bit, but we have a long way to go to kind of catch up. And we have a long way to go to undo the damage that we did in the last 50 years. And you look at downtown St. Pete, even though we've got some great areas, you can see that they kind of came in at some point And they crammed as many lanes as they could in those one-way streets, like 4th Street and 8th Street and 16th. And then you look at the sidewalk, and it's this little measly, 5 or 6 foot sidewalk without any street trees. And they spent a lot of money to make it that bad. And we're going to have to spend a lot more money to try to turn back the clock, or not turn back the clock, just make it better again. So, yeah, we got a lot of work to do.
It's crazy how much money we spend on road infrastructure. The Florida Department of Transportation, that's like that's their like main focus, like maintaining and building roads and expanding roads. And the moment that you suggest that we need to spend, $1 million on, public transit or something, it's like everybody's like, where's all that money going? Like, that's so expensive, but they don't really, there's no comparison. Like they don't really realize, like, we've been spending billions
Literally billions.
like billions of dollars, and this one Sunrunner is pales in comparison to how much money. Can you talk a little about transit-oriented development? It's one of my favorite things. So.
Sure. So, yeah, I've actually worked on a few projects that were TODs, as we say for short. But I think the general idea is to cluster housing and office and jobs near transit stations or transit stops. And obviously, the more people you have living within walking distance of those transit lines, the more people you have to support the transit. And also, it works for the people that live there. It's more accessible for them. Even if you live a half mile or a mile from transit, you're probably not very likely to walk a half a mile or a mile, especially in the Florida sun, to get to a stop. So you really need to focus on that. We usually, some transit, they use a half mile radius. I think a quarter mile radius is really more practical. People will generally walk 3 or 4 blocks to get to transit. Beyond that, I think it's a little bit of a stretch. But the other thing I like to point out about TODs is they come in a lot of different forms. When you think of all the different scales of like New York City, which has a great transit system, you go from Midtown Manhattan, where they have, 60-story buildings, to Brooklyn, where it might be 3-story walk-up townhouses. So, and that's enough density to support transit. So I think we need to focus on density, but I also, personally, I kind of favor a more European Brooklyn scale density outside of the downtown. I think downtown it's acceptable to have the larger buildings, but I don't think we need mid-rises and high-rises everywhere to support transit. I think, some dense developments more on the European scale will work as well.
I agree.
I
My
agree with.
neighborhood, Chicago, is like, I live like half a block from train, and like everywhere I look, I have a bus that can take me to another train or another bus. I had to go for an event in the suburbs last Sunday, and this was on like a regional train that's not close to me, but I was able to take the train down to a bus down at bus west to like this train line, the regional train line, and then take that regional train line all the way wherever I needed to go. And it was pouring rain, but I did not mind because I was like, this is amazing that I can like connect three different modes of transit to get like whatever 25 miles out of the city. And then it was like, so, and my neighborhood is like, a bunch of like low rises that are like barely any high rises in my neighborhood, and the train is usually always packed because people do take it wherever they're going. So yeah,
And it's
I
actually
think we
more
should.
convenient, probably, in a lot of ways, to get on a train than to, like in New York City, a lot of people take transit because there's no parking anywhere. Even if they were to drive, they'd have to pay $30 an hour or whatever it is.
It's
So that's part of the
54.
equation, to like make it easy to take transit, make it more difficult to to drive and park.
I think you touched on this a little bit, but I think we should still talk about this. There is a shift in urban planning priorities in the US, with focus on more pedestrian and non-car-centric infrastructure or design. One way Car-Free St. Pete has proposed doing that is with the St. Pete Straße. Can you talk a little bit more about that aspirational idea?
Sure. It's near and dear to my heart, as you know. So I think it kind of started with thinking about downtown. To me, it kind of has the most potential to be that, to support that car-free living environment. Even though it's getting, you know, beyond the prices are getting so high, it's hard to imagine living down there now. But anyway, it's got a well-connected street grid, and it has sidewalks. They're not always the best sidewalks, but it started with, you know, that has the most potential. So maybe instead of like spreading everything around, we just say, okay, let's make the downtown as walkable, walk-friendly as we can. So, and then the next question is like, where do you start? So we started looking at the street grid. And I thought, well, you've got to keep kind of the main through streets more car oriented. Maybe they can be a little less car oriented, but like 16th and 8th and 4th, you still need to get allow cars to be able to get through. But then you're left with these like 3 block by 3 block areas that seem like they could be more what we call pedestrian priority. So you might still allow cars to go through there, but they're at a reduced speed. They kind of behave, and pedestrians kind of rule that environment. So in that diagram, so we were left with these big squares, and then I got to thinking, well, that's even too much. That's even too ambitious, because they're not going to rebuild the streets and sidewalks in that large of in all of those little squares of downtown. So we started thinking, maybe if you just start with a single loop, a single pathway that kind of connected all the major destinations, starting kind of at the pier, and then it goes to Mirror Lake, and then it turns and eventually winds up at the gas plant district, and then down to the Dali Museum. So if you start with a loop, you can kind of get your foot in the door in terms of that pedestrian priority network, and then maybe later you can infill in the other areas. So and even that's kind of overly ambitious. Maybe not overly ambitious, but even doing a loop has proven to be very, you know, difficult to do. So, and it's kind of a long range project. But other cities have done this, and you know, taken on ambitious projects, like Atlanta's doing the Beltline, which is much longer. Granted, it's on a most of it's on a railroad right of way, so they don't have to deal with the existing streets as much. But I think Portland is doing something like that. St. Louis, New York, obviously, is always doing cool stuff. So I think it can be done. I just think it needs to get a little more grassroots support and maybe some leadership from above eventually. And you know, maybe someday it will take off.
Yeah.
It's a
Good
cool, it's
out.
a really cool idea. And if anybody hasn't seen the Straza visuals that Michael created, you can go to carfreestpete.org. And it's on the website. I believe it's published on there.
Yep.
So now that I'm moving in a few couple of weeks, I may be back. You guys will have to take on the leadership.
And you know, like the way we are proposing to implement it makes really a lot of sense of, you know, kind of closing down blocks at a time. And then also people get used to those like streets being blocked all the time. And I think that's what they're doing here in Chicago. They are kind of blocking off streets for blocks at a time. And then in my neighborhood, there are at least a couple of them that I have seen where I think they did it during the pandemic, and then people loved it, so they just kept it. And I think our older woman really kind of fought for it as well. So like you said, there is like a local leadership that needs to also, sign up and sign on to support us as well.
And just to clarify, in some streets we realize that you can't completely block them for cars. So if you've got garages or things like that that cars need to get through. So on those, again, we would look at creating the environment where pedestrians kind of rule the street, but cars are allowed to pass and get to the garages, and they just have to do it at a slower speed, like 15 miles an hour instead of 40 miles an hour. So not just, I didn't want to scare people to thinking we're trying to close down the whole downtown to cars. It's not like that. It's more just, again, prioritizing pedestrian movement and allowing the cars to pass at slower speeds.
We're not coming to take your cars. It's really just,
That's right.
it's really more about increasing options for people to get around the downtown
Yeah,
area.
that's right.
And I just want to correct myself. Earlier I said carfreestpete.org. It's carfreestpete.com. And if you want to see the Straza plans, it's carfreestpete.com/St. Pete Straza. Straza is Straza.
And I don't think I mentioned the word Straza obviously came from combining street and plaza. So we were thinking it's a street because it's still used for mobility, but we also want it to be kind of a gathering place like a plaza. So this was a invented term we came up with. Actually, we've been using it for a number of years. And when the Straza idea came along, I was like, oh, let's use that for our own Straza.
So one question that I think a lot of people have, and myself included, is about how we measure the success of some of these big infrastructure projects. Because at first you don't really, it's hard to see the benefits of these big infrastructure projects, right? Like they're not always immediately visible. It takes time, for people to, adopt new behaviors and for us to see the benefits. How, as a planner, do you measure the success of a project like that?
That is a tricky question, I'll say, because it really kind of depends on your perspective a little bit. Because you could say if you come into an area and you do improvements and you make it more beautiful, then some people stand to benefit from that. Obviously, if you own property, your property values may go up. Of course, your taxes might go up with it too, but you're gonna win when you sell your property. But then rents might also go up at the same time. It's kind of a double-edged sword. So, from an economic standpoint, sometimes it's hard to measure the success. But I like to focus more on quality of life, value, more than necessarily economic value. Economic value is important too. But and the quality of life is kind of harder to measure, but you can kind of know it when you see it. And we all enjoy, the waterfront here in St. Pete, where we've got the park space along the waterfront instead of just development right up to the edge. So you can see the benefit there of the planning. The same with the pier, that was a big investment, but obviously it benefits everyone. So maybe it's more of a qualitative assessment and not always quantitative, I guess. And it would also depend on your perspective.
And that's why I asked the question, because you see, Facebook is full of haters, as they say, right? And you always see complaining about like, oh, look how much money they spent on the pier or this park or, this Sunrunner or this infrastructure project. And they're always turning to like the dollar amount and how expensive it is. And they just imagine, I guess, that that money could have been used for a number of other things. And so it's hard to have a conversation with people that make those arguments because they don't see that the benefits of having like green spaces and things like that as well as some others might.
Even though they may be enjoying those, they probably go to North Shore Park and walk along the water, but God forbid we make a new park somewhere and spend money on that or on a Straza or something like that.
Yeah, and I think even infrastructure projects like Sunrunner, it takes time for us to see the results of like how much ridership we are getting, or things like that, like those the quantitative successes of these projects kind of only come through afterwards, and like after a few years when we see that, oh, the car usage has reduced on that stretch, or like there have been less accidents because like there are less cars per hour or whatever that are traveling, or more people are using the bus, or the businesses have gotten more revenue because more people are traveling longer distances or whatever, And so I think people also don't realize that like the successes of these kind of projects don't happen overnight, and that we need some time to just figure out like how people are using the projects that we build as well.
And even, 100 years ago, when they were doing some of that early planning in St. Pete, there were battles
Yeah,
then
sure.
about, preserving green space and investing in the waterfront and things like that. And now, of course, everybody recognizes what a good decision that was. So.
Well, I also hear the argument often, like, oh, well, this is just for tourists. And I'm always like, I live here. I enjoy living here too. Like, it's not just for tourists.
Yeah, I feel like every weekend here is a vacation. So in a way, we are tourists. When we're not working, we get to enjoy the same things that the tourists get to enjoy.
That's very true. Yeah.
And
And
those tourists provide jobs, so, it's part of our economy.
Yeah. And I think that's why like we kind of, we have spoken about this like in many meetings, but as St. Pete grows, what changes in urban planning would you like to see in the city to accommodate for growth, and challenges that may come with it?
So, oh man, probably a lot of things. I definitely want to continue to see more investment in walking and bike infrastructure. I remember one of my early visits to St. Pete. I saw the protected bike lanes on First Ave South, and I was really impressed with those. I want to see more of those. So continuing on that path. More investment, we basically just we need more money for that kind of stuff. I want to see St. Pete grow and definitely need can get denser, but again, I prefer this kind of low to mid scale density. To me, if I go up and down Central Avenue and I look at some of the newer buildings, the one that feel more most comfortable are like in the 3 to 4 story range, and maybe 5 stories, and you can get pretty dense with that type of development. So I would like to see kind of a focus on that. I don't want to, walk down a canyon, a Wall Street type canyon on Central Avenue. So I would like to see that. What else? Just, leveraging all the great assets that we already have, like the waterfront and the parks and the overall character. I love the brick streets, so I hope we preserve those. So yeah, there's a lot of great things, and hopefully one day the Straza maybe.
So this is actually a good follow-up question for that content. And it is, what can we do as citizens, right, that aren't, we don't, I don't work for the city or anything. What can we do to support the initiatives that make the city safer for pedestrians and bicyclists? How can we influence some of these big decisions, and developments that are driving the change in St. Pete?
Yeah, I think, just continuing to be involved is definitely a big thing. I would love it if one of you all would run for city council and maybe mayor one day. I keep pushing all the young people to get involved in politics, even though I myself have not done it. But a lot of decisions are made by the council and the mayor ultimately, so getting as much exposure and contact as you can with those folks and selling the general community on the vision as well, I think. Because like you said, sometimes people don't want their tax dollars going towards some of these things. So raising awareness. You know, I've been to some neighborhood meetings where I've thrown out the term complete streets, and you know, we've been using it for like 30 years, and a lot of people have never heard that term before and never thought about anything other than automobile transportation on a street. They just equate street with getting around in a car. So sometimes if you just expose them to that idea and say, oh, a street can take care of pedestrians and bikes and scooters, and you know, all of a sudden you've expanded their awareness of those issues. So yeah, stay involved and run for council. Easier said than done.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. I considered it once, and I was talking. Yeah. I asked a friend who had run, and she was telling me everything that went into it, and I was like, oh, that sounds like,
yeah, it's not for everybody. But we do, you know, I think we have a few that are open to those ideas. I know Richie that covers our area, yeah. Richie Floyd, is an advocate for these types of things. So shout out to him for that.
Well, anything else? So make sure, any more question?
No, I think
Michael did a
good job kind of explaining everything to us.
Yeah, you really did. Planning, I think urban planning, planning especially for urban areas, is super important, because I do sometimes feel like, or I have felt in the past, that development is sometimes unmanaged, right? It feels like it just stuff is just randomly, haphazardly, but you can tell when there's a plan and people follow it, and as much as they can, I guess, as much as they are pushed to. And I think it makes sense. And so I'm really glad that we were able to talk about this sort of stuff on this podcast.
And I will add that at one point I wanted to make, I think in downtown and maybe even beyond, I think St. Pete has seen a lot of development in what we call the private realm, you know, on the private properties. We've got new buildings going up, but we really need to not forget what we call the public realm, which is the street right-of-ways, that when you improve the buildings, you also need to improve everything in between those buildings. And I really think we need more focus on investing in that, whether it's the complete streets plan or the Straza or parkways or whatever. Like, you know, we need to not take our eye, just because development is happening doesn't mean we can take our eye off of the public investment that needs to be made.
And
go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
We also need to, you know, think about the local agencies that kind of talk about transportation, and then, like, you know, what are the exurban and suburban agencies, and how do we make this development sustainable for all all of us, like, say, like within the Pinellas County, like how does doing something in St. Pete benefit Clearwater, and also, like, you know, how do we connect, like, all those dots, and, you know, how do we make that transport throughout the region much more sustainable, as opposed to just having to drive everywhere if you had something to do in Marlin County.
Yeah. Even though I love the Pinellas Trail and I hope it stays, sometimes I dream about, wouldn't it be cool if you could get on a train in St. Pete and go up to Tarpon Springs for dinner?
Exactly.
And, you know, and Texas, of all places, they have corridors where they have commuter rail and bike paths right next to each other, you know, sharing the same corridor. So it is possible to kind of accommodate both. I don't know if we have enough space on the Pinellas Trail, but I would love to see some, you know, more rail. I know it seems pie in the sky, but all it takes are a few, you know, leaders in the community to say, hey, let's do this. And there's always a way if there's a will, I think.
We have a lot of really wonderful little towns and cities in Pinellas County. And with being that I don't have a car, it would be so difficult for me to eat in. You know, I used to have something like that. I really would.
The whole reason I've never, maybe this is an excuse, been up to Forward Pinellas to attend their meetings is because it's in Clearwater, and it's like, oh, I can't imagine driving to
Yeah.
Clearwater. It just seems like torture to have to go up there on 19 or however you get there on. So, but if there was a train, I would be up there for every meeting.
I actually want to throw maybe kind of a curveball question at you. I was curious what you thought about the gas plant redevelopment plan that was just recently, I think, approved, right? It was official just recently.
Yeah, so overall I think it's a good plan. It's maybe not quite the way I would have done it, but they didn't knock on every door and ask how everybody would develop it. But I look back at the way that cities used to be developed, including St. Pete, and basically all they did was like lay out the streets and the lots, into smaller chunks, and maybe put a few regulations in, and then start selling smaller pieces of properties and let it develop in a more incremental way. So it's not just one entity, one developer, or a few developers doing everything. It's kind of like, multiple architects, multiple developers. And so I think that would have been another path. I do like the emphasis on the pedestrian environment. I know they're going to really focus on that in the plan, so I think that's good. I know there's an affordable housing component, which I think is good. So overall, I guess my other biggest concern is that it's going to maybe suck a lot of the funding or revenue to help support it that might have gone to things like the Straws, or might have been spread a little bit more around downtown. So I do, yeah, worry that it's going to be kind of a, it's going to suck a lot of the investment, the public investment from the rest of downtown, and kind of, focus it in that one area. So hopefully, maybe it won't do that, but that would be my concern. So, but overall, in terms of the overall structure of the plan, they have a grid. Again, they're focusing on the pedestrian environment. And so I think they're doing quite a few of the things right.
Well, thanks.
What
Thanks
do
for
you
that.
all think about it?
I'll be honest. There were some things in the Sugar Hill redevelopment plan that I liked more. I wish they would have focused on highlighting the creek a little bit more than they did. I think that I think waterways are such an asset to, especially a place like St. Pete. But you read about places like around the world, like Seoul, Korea. They kind of ignored a creek that ran through the city for a long time, and they even built roads over it, and like we have, but to a more extreme level. And they a few years ago, maybe like a decade ago, they actually had this huge project where they basically brought back the
Funded, yeah.
to the city, right? And made it like a this sort of this the hallmark running through the city, this sort of
Right.
shiny thing. And they really featured it and put public spaces around it, and it looks beautiful. And it's like one of those things where like, wow, that like we've been missing this whole time. And I feel like we could be focusing on the creek a little bit more, as it is a beautiful little waterway. And it's very tranquil, and I feel like it's an asset that we're kind of not really using.
Exploiting on it, yeah.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking
One
for.
rendering I saw did have, it definitely is exposed and treated as a green. I don't know how much of it though. I didn't see the plan that went with the rendering at the time, so.
Yeah, I think they're trying a little bit harder than what it currently is, which is, I mean, currently it just looks like this
A
sort of
ditch.
no ground, like a ditch. Yeah, it looks like a ditch around Tropicana Field. You wouldn't notice it walking through. So, and of course they still have the opportunity to sort of design that a little differently. But I hope they do, because I think it is they want to.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at it actually very carefully or detail wise. So I'm going to take this week to actually kind of look at the announcement and the project. And like I kind of like was ignoring it for the last couple of days. So I haven't like looked at it.
Seems kind of like a done deal, so more or
Right.
less.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
And Michael, you can answer this for me and for hopefully this other people have this question, but this is really more of a conceptual plan, right? They
Right.
still, it's not really the true architecture and plan. It's really more a
Right.
conceptual thing. So this will evolve, right?
Yes, definitely. I was actually going to point that out that a lot of times these early renderings are not what you end up getting. And, on the worst case scenarios, you get something that's not nearly as nice as what's shown in the renderings, but maybe the best case scenario, you get something that's better. But, there's been a lot of plans that looked really beautiful at this stage. And, then the end result, I can think of a project in Kentucky in my hometown where they sold the city on this kind of mixed use type development. And, they got all the zoning and all the incentives in place. And then what they built was this horrible big box shopping center, huge parking lot with not one tree in the parking lot. And I don't think that's what's going to happen here. I know the city's watching it much more carefully, but yeah, there is a potential disconnect between the beautiful renderings but I hope I hope it's even better than the renderings. I'll be
Me too.
optimistic.
And it's possible that there will be opportunities for public involvement for some of the things.
Yeah.
So we should all be paying attention still.
Exactly.
That's true. That's
Well, this is probably one of the longest episodes that we've had. Thank you so much for your time. This has been really enlightening for me. And I hope I
Thanks for
was.
having me.
Yeah.
This is
Yeah.
my first
Oh.
podcast, so
Oh.
and I
Congratulations.
enjoyed it. First time
So
being
we are
on one,
lucky to have
obviously I
you.
listen to them a lot.
Yeah. So we are very lucky to have you. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for hosting. Great questions. Enjoy the conversation. And hope I wasn't too long-winded. And
No, not
please keep up the good work. I'll be checking on you, even though I'm getting ready to move in a couple of weeks.
at all.
I'll stay tuned.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Car Free Conversations.
Please follow us on social media. We are Car Free St. Pete on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.